Radio 3, 90 to 93 FM on digital radio and online. It's 1 o'clock, time now for a summary of the news. Major changes to the tax system come into force today. Most people will be able to earn more before they have to start paying tax, although the special allowance for pensioners is frozen. The top rate of income tax will fall from 50 pence to 45. Labour says the changes will see struggling families left out of pocket, but will give more money to higher earners. The government says that 25 million people will be better off. Hundreds of people have been queuing outside emergency vaccination clinics in South Wales, where there's been an outbreak of measles. Around 600 children and teenagers have been infected, predominantly in the Swansea area. 200 cases have also been confirmed since September in a separate outbreak of measles in the northeast of England. It compares with a figure of 18 for the whole of 2011. Foreign diplomats in North Korea appear to be ignoring a suggestion that they might consider leaving Pyongyang. North Korea has said it can't guarantee the safety of embassy staff if it goes to war with South Korea and the United States. The authorities in Iraq say 22 people have been killed in a suicide bomb attack on an election campaign tent in Bakuba, a city near Baghdad. It's the latest in a series of attacks linked to provincial elections later this month. A consortium has saved the carpet maker Axminster, which went into administration last month. 300 jobs have already been lost, but the deal will save around 100. The last street in France, still named after Marshal Pétain, the country's collaborationist leader in World War II, is to be renamed. It's in the northeastern village of Belrun, near the town of Verdun, the site of a First World War battle in which Pétain was the senior French commander. The local mayor said he hoped the new name would have less painful memories attached to it. And the weather, it'll be dry with sunny spells for most of the UK and with light winds, feel pleasantly warm in the sunshine. But snow will affect northern Scotland and Shetland. And that's the BBC News and Weather. Now it's 2 o'clock, time for the 1 o'clock, I'm so sorry, 2 minutes past one. Time for the early music show with Lucy Skeeping.
Thank you. Today we're exploring a style of wind music from medieval and Renaissance Italy that was known as alta cappella. It's a term that seems to have been first coined in the early 1400s by the Flemish music theorist Johannes Tinctoris. No doubt a serious fellow, but with a nice line in red velvet coats, if his portrait's anything to go by. The word alta can be translated as loud, so he was partly referring to instruments that could produce enough volume to be heard outdoors. But alta could also mean high or grand, suggesting that alta cappella might also imply high-pitched music, or perhaps that it was the preserve of those on the high levels of society. And it may even have meant music performed from high up in a minstrel's gallery. Today we can see alta cappella bands in paintings, often as part of some formal procession or accompanying dancing. But just what would they have actually sounded like if you'd been there? We just heard a 16th century Italian dance, the anonymous Rostiboli Gioioso, played by the ensemble who I'm featuring throughout today's programme, Les Eaux et les Bas. They play a variety of loud wind instruments, reeds such as shawms and bombards, early trumpets, cornetti, trombones and bagpipes, even sometimes with percussion as well, just as their predecessors would have done in the Italian courts, where by the late 15th century, alta cappella bands had become very much the backbone of musical life. But in fact, the whole concept of loud wind bands was in existence much earlier than that, and it came not from Europe, but from the Arab lands. The shawm is mentioned from the 4th century BC, but many Europeans' first encounter with the combined sound of reed instruments, trumpets and drums must have been as a result of trade links with the Muslim world and no doubt on the battlefields of the Crusades. Soon, Western princes and aristocrats adopted the idea themselves, appointing similar bands to fanfare their presence, to accompany them on their travels, to signal the hours at sunrise and sunset, and of course to accompany dancing. This is the anonymous Dance of Cleves, here given something of an exotic Eastern flavour. Thank you. The Dance of Cleves from 15th century Italy, recorded in 2009 at a concert at Montalbane, given by Les Eaux et les Bas. Over some 20 years, Les Eaux et les Bas has become one of Europe's most active ensembles, recreating the music of the Alta Capella bands. Not that there's much to go on. Almost no original instruments survive, so reconstructing them requires quite a bit of detective work. Paintings can provide vital information, but of course modern copies need not only to look authentic, but be actually playable as well. Les Eaux et les Bas with Viel Liebe sit auf dieser Erde, a piece found in the notebook of a man called Zorzi Nikolai Trombetta da Modone. It's a wonderful name, isn't it? And we know he was a ship's trumpeter in the mid-1400s and that he later was the founding director of the Venice town waits. So what sort of professional life might a man like Zorzi Nikolai have had? Well, the earliest waits were watchmen who piped loud signals from the walls of fortified castles or cities to warn of invasion, perhaps, or in case of fire. But in the course of time, they turned into fully trained musicians, performing at civic entertainments, seasonal festivals, official functions, that sort of thing. They had to be constantly on call, and in return were guaranteed good wages and living conditions. But the formation of these bands was also of great significance to musical history, because now, for the first time, professional wind music wasn't just reserved for the aristocratic minority, but was accessible to all. Now, in every town square, favourite tunes might waft through the air from the mouths of the Alta Capella, and in the new dance houses as well, where just about anyone with a nimble foot and an ear for a good tune could join the party. By the end of the 1600s, many Alta Capella musicians had become so virtuosic and so much in demand that they could move from place to place, being offered ever higher salaries. As their repertoire became more sophisticated, the very best would commit long and complex lines of music entirely to memory. And since there were no specific instructions in the scores as to what instruments should be used, there were artistic choices to be made as well. So a player might begin a performance on, say, the small mellow cornetto, move to a flute if the next section required a gentler texture, and end by blowing the strong bass notes of a sackbut. One man who certainly knew all about the requirements of the Alta Capella bands was the Flemish music publisher Tilman Suzzato, because he'd been a trombonist in one himself. In 1551, he published a collection of pieces under the title Dancery. And we'll hear two of them now. Passo e Medio uses the harmonic sequence known as the Passo Mezzo Antico. You might recognise it because it's the same sequence upon which Greensleeves is based. But first, a stately setting of Josquin's Mille Regrets. ¶¶ Les Hauts et les Bas, with two pieces from Sassato's Danserie, published in 1551, Passé et Medio, and before that, Pavane Mille Regrets. We're going to stay with dance music now, but this time from the 14th century, and how different it sounds. Medieval paintings often show angels blowing trumpets and reed instruments, beating drums and cymbals and shaking jingly tambourines. These were instruments described in the Bible, of course, so perhaps it was the musical style of the biblical lands, the Middle East, that characterised their sound too. We can certainly hear Arabic roots here in this 14th century dance, the anonymous Isabella.
Thank you.
dance from the 14th century, perhaps named after the lady it was dedicated to, Isabella. You're listening to The Early Music Show with me, Lucy Skeeping, and I'm exploring the early wind band music known as alta cappella. Bialte di Castiglia, a dance from 15th century Italy. It was played there on the lute and medieval fiddle. But I think it's fair to say that once the dancing got going, and certainly for big outdoor events, it was the loud wind instruments of the alta cappella that held pride of place. Not that everyone was pleased. Conrad of Meggenberg, writing in 1350, complained that these days the loud shawms and trumpets have driven the sober fiddles away from the festivities, and the young girls dance like mad to the noise, tastelessly wobbling their bottoms like cows. On the other hand, that was probably part of the appeal, because the open harmonies and strange progressions of this next piece certainly seem to have inspired many of today's movie soundtracks. It's a 14th century estampie, a popular medieval dance form, and one thing that gives it its special character is its use of hocket, a technique where one instrument plays a note or a short sequence while the other rests for a moment, and vice versa. And there's also a refrain at different points, which is slightly altered each time it happens. So it's quite complicated stuff. And anyone who's had a go at this sort of thing will know just how easy it is to lose your place as the bars whiz by. Yep, these alta cappella musicians must have been pretty virtuosic.
Thank you.
Retrove, a dance tune from the early 1300s. It was played there on a shawm and on a bombard, but the early alto cappella bands might also feature bagpipes and cornetti as well, which were particularly favoured by more refined audiences. Percussion also had a part to play to beat out the dance steps. But it was the introduction of the slide trumpet or the early trombone which was to take a proud and important role in the alta cappella in many of the main Italian cities. Well, here's some of that variety in this final section of dances performed by Les Oe Le Bas to take us to the end of the programme. They're from the manual of the Italian Renaissance dancing master Domenico da Piacenza, who worked for some of the most influential families of the time. First, we'll hear La Vita di Collino. Then comes a slow bassa danza, said to have been the most difficult, the most noble of dances, played here on the lute and fiddle. It's followed by an upbeat saltarello, which the Spanish called an alta danza, or high dance. And finally, we'll get down with the common folk for a piva, a bagpipe dance that graced many a village green or tavern courtyard at festival time, guaranteed to keep going all day, just as long as you topped up the piper's flagon.
Thank you.
series of anonymous 15th century dances for the Alta Capella, ending with a piva for bagpipes performed by the group Les Eaux et les Bas. Today's early music show is presented by Lucy Skeeping and produced in Salford by Chris Wines. Now, just before our next programme, I ought to point out that your copy of Radio Times, or whatever you use as a programme guide, may well suggest that our live opera from the Met will begin at 5 o'clock this evening. In fact, Das Rheingold begins at 6, and before it you can hear Jazz Record Requests starting at 5 o'clock. But now on Radio 3, it's 2 o'clock, and there's another chance to hear the lunchtime concert given at London's Wigmore Hall last Monday by the Arcanto Quartet. It's introduced by Louise Fryer.
Violinists Antje Weithaus and Daniel Sepek, viola player Tobias Zimmermann and cellist Jean-Guillaume Kerras have their own distinguished solo careers. And in 2002, after playing chamber music together in various combinations, they decided to form the Arcanto Quartet. In the past decade, they've played together all over the world, including tours to Israel, Japan and North America. They're here at Wigmore Hall this lunchtime to play string quartets by Haydn and Brahms, and they begin with a senior partner in that pairing and one of a set of six quartets Haydn composed in 1790, his final year of full-time employment with the Esterházy family. The quartet's in B minor and starts with an allegro spirituoso that hints at difficulties to come, and they appear in the second movement adagio, which slips into a melodious B major, an awkward key for strings. Haydn was writing for a top violinist, his friend Johann Tost, and in the third movement minuet, the demands on the first violin are virtuosic, becoming even more extreme in the presto finale. Tost was a colourful character. He led the second violins in Haydn's orchestra before heading to Paris for a few years, where he seems to have pirated some of Haydn's compositions. By 1790, he was back in Esterházy, where he married a housekeeper on the estate and set himself up as a cloth merchant. The Opus 64 quartets were timely in view of Haydn's first trip to England. His promoter Salomon took the first violinist's role, giving what's thought to be the quartet's first public outing at the season of concerts he organised at the Festino Rooms, just a short step from here in Hanover Square. It was another 100 years or so before Wigmore Hall was built to provide a venue intended to be grandly impressive and yet intimate enough for recitals. And to prove it fulfils that brief, the Arcanto Quartet are coming onto the stage right on cue to play Haydn, his string quartet in B minor, Opus 64, number 2.